Hi, Sarah. I'm getting introduced this year with something coming from kind of an unusual, unexpected place. I assume that everybody around the table knows who Akira Kurosawa was. Akira Kurosawa? Akira Kurosawa. What? Akira Kurosawa was the great Japanese director, directed some classic films. Seven Samurai, Ron, book classics, but for our purposes, the one that we're most concerned with is a movie called Rashomon. Right, Rashomon was such a I don't know if it's a genre-shattering movie, but it actually became the name of a genre in literature. That's how good it was. It's a story about a slave who gets dragged off into the jungle and beaten up or something. And there's four characters in it, and the movie basically tells the story, same story four times, each from a different point of view, and very different. And Rashomon is therefore becomes like a genre of literature where you have a story that's being told from multiple perspectives. If you ever read the book of The Marathon Man, remember the movie The Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman? If you ever read the book of The Marathon Man, it's written exactly in that style. Right, it has these two disparate stories going on, and you have no idea they're connected until Babe and the Doc meet, and then suddenly you realize, oh, that's who he is, and that's who he is. It's a brilliant piece. Why am I mentioning that? Because when we look at the story of Rivka, whose marriage is the centerpiece of this, really whose engagement is the centerpiece of this parasha, and you have the entire story in front of you, it's the longest chapter in Bereishit here, although here I picked up in Pasuk Yod, you find that the story, we read the story from the point of view of the narrator. Narrator being capital N, God, this is how God told Moshe to write the story. However, whose point of view in the story is it? Now, how many different points of view are there in the story? Because let's be honest, there is no single story that is objective. Every story is told from a point of view. Right? So what is the point of view, what are the different points of view possible in this story? The point of view of the slave who's going to get the girl, the point of view of Avraham from a distance, the point of view perhaps of the family, the point of view of the girl, maybe the point of view of Yitzchak. Now, from whose point of view is this story being told? And the reality is, it's being told from the perspective... What? From the slave, right? From the Eved. However, if you take a look at it carefully, you can see that the text broadly hints to the fact that that's not the only way to see what's going on. So I'm going to ask a different question that takes us further into the story, a story that we all know. What happens later on? Rivka comes, marries Yitzchak, 20 years later they have kids... All right, what does Rivka groom Yaakov to do? Because she does. She coaches him. What does she coach him to do later on? To act deceptively and steal the bracha, which in turn inflames Esav, which in turn generates her telling Yaakov to run away and go where? Back to Haran, to Lavan. Right? And what plays out there? A series of deceptions back and forth between Yaakov and Lavan. Right? What is it that's going on there? And a big part of this has to do with Parshas Vayetze, but we're going to take a look at what it has to do here. I'm going to read the story through and point out, we're looking at this story from the perspective of the slave. So, like, the objective reality of what's going on. And notice that on the page, on page one, every time that we are looking at it from the perspective of the slave, I put it in red. Right? However, every time that we're looking at it from the perspective of Rivka, I put it in blue. Right? This has nothing to do with the political parties. Yeah.
You use two different words to describe what Rivka did instead of Yaakov. He was groomed and coached. Groomed would indicate that throughout his life she was grooming and coached. Would be more short term prior to going into
right. And I
which, did you mean both?
I certainly meant coached, and I were hinted, and I'm glad you caught it. I mean, I hinted to the fact that she may be groomed. In other words, the fact that Yaakov was successful at this, and this is something Chazal point out. When Yaakov arrives in Haran, who does he meet? He meets shepherds, right? And he says, do you know Laban? Yes, here's Rachel. He meets Rachel. What's the first thing he does? Famously gives her a kiss. And then what does he say? Vagev le Rachel ki achi aviyahu. Right? That he is the brother of her father. Now that's fine, because what does ach mean in Tanakh? Ach means, could be a male relative, could be an uncle, right? Could be a nephew. But the Midrash picks up on it, says, v'chi achi aviyahu, v'ahalo ben achi aviyahu, meaning, perachot aviyahu. He's not her uncle, he is her cousin. So the back conversation is that he says to Rachel, I want to marry you. Rachel says, fine, I want to marry you, but my father is a very deceptive guy. What does Yaakov say back? Achiv ani b'ramaut. I can hold my own in deception with him. And that's what leads to the whole sort of the simanim, and you know, that whole piece. So in other words, the Midrash here is building up the idea that Yaakov is a trained deceiver. Not just that he did it once. Achivani b'ramaut. I know how to do deception as well. The problem is that he's now fallen into the hands of a pro. And so he gets out deceived. Maybe. That belongs in Vayetze. So we take a look at the story from the perspective of the Eved, which is really, if you will, the objective position, in the sense that it has all of the information available. And watch. Vayikach ha'Eved asarag malam. He's called ha'Eved. Right? And when he comes to the well, he prays. And what does he say in his prayer? Aseh chesed im Adoni Avraham, my master Avraham. Right? And that's how he continues to present it. He look at Pasuk Yod Zayin, Vayarotz ha'Eved likrata. Right? So the Eved runs to her. However, when he runs to her, what does she see? What does she see? Does she see a guy with a big iron branded into his arm, with a little picture of Avram on top and saying, boss? What does she see? She sees a man who has come from a distance, leading other men with camels. And then what else does she see?
When did he pick up the camels?
What? He brought them. What do you mean?
When he left?
He went from Avram with camels. Avram's a merchant. He has camels. So like in Pasuk Yod Chet, Vatomer Shtei Adoni. He asked for water. What does she say? Drink, my lord. Which means she looks at him as a wealthy guy. She doesn't say, and you would never call an Eved that. In their society, you would never say that. I don't care how young you are and how old he is. You would never say my lord to a slave. Right? And now, she starts giving him a drink and starts taking care of the camels. A couple years ago, we talked about how long that might have taken. We're talking about hours. Pasuk Chafalas, Vaha'ish Mishta'ela. Suddenly he's not called an Eved, he's called an Ish. Ha'ish Mishta'ela. Right? Because what's she watching? She's seeing an Ish. And the Ish is standing there, he's astounded. What?
Something
important and not a slave. Exactly. Right? And now he takes Havdaikacha Ish, Nezem Zahav, he takes a ring and he takes the bracelets and puts them on her, the ring and everything, gives it to her. And then he asks who she is. Notice he hasn't identified himself. He's just a guy, but a guy with a lot of gold and a guy with camels. She's given him a lot to drink. Now he's Kilo paying her back and then saying, who's your family? And what happens when she says who she is? In Pasuk Chavav, Vayikod Ha'ish, Vayishtachu L'Adonai. What does she see? She sees a man who, after he hears all this great news, bows down in thanksgiving to his God. She doesn't know what that means, but that's what she sees. Now he prays, and I'm willing to put dimes to dollars that he prays silently. We hear it because we get to know everything. Baruch Adonai Elohei Adoni Avraham. In other words, he refers in his prayer to God as the God of his master. But she doesn't know that. She just sees this man of it, and he's bowed down. And he continues to refer to his master. Now, in the meantime, she comes home and tells everybody what's going on. Take a look in Pasuk Chaftet. Vivka achu shmo Lavan. Vayarotz Lavan el ha'ish. What did she tell Lavan? What did she tell the family? Kodi ber elai ha'ish. Some wealthy guy came and did this. So Lavan comes running to the ish, right? And he says, why are you standing outside? Right? And he says, bo baruch Adonai. He calls him blessed of God. You'd never say that to a slave. Lama tamor b'chutz v'anochi nipiti abaytu b'kom l'agmalim. Come on in, I made room in the house, there's room for the camels. V'avo ha'ish abayta. He comes into the house. Now, who's in the house? Well, if you take a look back at Pasuk, Chafchet, you'll see that Rivka ran to her mother's house. And now Rivka's not part of the scene. So they bring him into the house, and Vayavoa Isha Baita, he walks into the house as an Ish. He walks in and they say, eat. He says, I won't eat till I tell the story. They say, okay, tell the story. What's the first thing he said? Eved Avraham Anochi. And he describes the story. And God blessed my master with all of this wealth and everything else. And then my master's wife gave birth to a son. And he gave all that wealth to the son. He's totally representing his master and the interests. What?
Do we assume they know any of this story?
No, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But if something's confirming it, but he's sitting there talking with the people who has to negotiate with, which is Betuel and Lavan. Maybe Mrs. Betuel, right? We don't know what her name is, Mrs. Betuel, right? But Rivka is not there, and I know Rivka is not there because of what happens a little bit later on down here, as you'll see. Okay? And so he tells his whole story, and he tells the story of the oath that Avraham said, go and get a wife. My master said, go get a wife for Yitzchak and go to this place, etc. So it's all very straight up to them. Now, we go further down, and he says in Pasuk Memtet, I'm skipping way ahead, Im yeshchem osim chesed v'emet et adoni hagiduli. And again, he's still saying, if you're going to do the right thing for my master, tell me. And if not, then I'll go Yamin Usmo, which means south or north. Right? What do they say to her? What do they say to him? Hine Rivka lefanecha kach valech. In other words, this is clearly from God. Here's Rivka, kach valech. And what do they say? Utihi isha leven adonecha. Meaning, she'll be a wife for your master's son. That's exactly the plan. Very good. Then what happens? He takes out some gifts and gives it to them. And then, Vayomar achi avima, nun hei, teisheva nara itano yamimo asor achar telech. Now that they've come to agreement, they say, you know what, let her stay here for 10 months or for a year, and then go. And he says, no, we've been successful, let's not put it off, right? Al tacharoti. Now, vayomruni krala na'arav nishalat piha. Parenthetically, just one point. Famously, there's a Midrash Seder Olam. We've talked about this a lot of times. Midrash Seder Olam, which is a Midrash authored by Rabbi Yosef ben Chalafta, which is a chronography of the events in Tanakh. And it identifies going all the way back, you know, how many years somebody lived, how years interspersed, how years interconnected, and when certain events in Tanakh that aren't dated happened relative to other dates. And it makes that connection. It goes all the way till the time of the Churban. And Midrash Seder Olam has several manuscripts. In one manuscript, it actually makes the claim that Rivka was three, because the one thing that we know is that Yitzchak married when he was 40, and we know that Yitzchak was 37 when his mother died. That's all we know. How old was Rivka at the time? We don't know. Where is the Akedah in that whole scene? We don't know. And so one version of that Midrash, which is probably the weakest Ketav Yad that we have, says that she was three and that Yitzchak was 37 at the time, and it was at the moment of the Akedah that she was born and that Sarah died. All these things happened at the same time, and hence she put it together. However, in most of the Ketav Yad, actually Yitzchak is 26 at the Akedah, and he lives another 11, Sarah lives another 11 years after that. And that means that she is 14 when they get married, because if we hold that she was born at the time of the Akedah, then if he's 40 when they get married, and he's 26 at the Akedah, she's 14. Which, by the way, makes a lot more sense in the story. To have her be like that is like 3 years old, very weird. First of all, to have her be doing all of this stuff. And second of all, they turn around and say, Nikrala na ravani shalat pia. Why don't we ask her what she wants to do? You don't ask her, I don't care what. You don't ask a three-year-old girl, hi, do you want to spend the rest of your life in a foreign country and marry somebody? It's just, not a responsible thing. So if you're going to turn around and say, well, the three-year-olds then were like, you know, well, then it's meaningless to talk about age if you do that. Anyhow, just a side point. But they ask her, now notice what happens. Vayikru'u l'Rivka, it's the pasuk I made it in big. Vayikru'u l'Rivka vayimru elaha. What does it mean, Vayikru'u l'Rivka? What does that mean? They summoned her, which means she wasn't there. So all this discussion's happening, and Rivka's somewhere else. They call her and they say, what? Hatelchi im ha'ish hazeh. Right? And what does she say? Elech. So they send her off, and they send her with Eved Avraham. Who knows it's Eved Avraham? They do. Right? And now, what happens? They give her a beautiful bracha, and Pasuk Samach Aleph, because what's Rivka saying? Rivka and her girls are saying, Anish, and they're following Anish. And what does Rivka think? That's who she's going to marry. Wealthy guy shows up and offered a lot of money. Seems like a nice guy. I'll go off and marry him. It's the most reasonable read of what's going on here. And now what happens? So now we're switching. This is the Rosh Shimon. We're switching here between her viewpoint and, so we say, the objective viewpoint, which is that the Eved takes her. Now what happens? In the meantime, Yitzchak ba mibo lechaver lecharoi v'yishev eretz ha-negev. Yitzchak has his shrine where he davens, where Hagar had her vision, and he's there. V'yitzei Yitzchak l'suach pasidim from Erev. V'yisai nav v'yar. Now, it's an interesting thing about that term. V'yisai nav means he lifts up his eyes and sees. So it makes sense. If you're on the ground and somebody on a camel, you lift up your eyes, you see the camel. So you'll see it gets inverted here. Which is not altitudinally accurate. You don't lift up your eyes when you're on a camel to see somebody on the ground. So, which by the way is used in a similar way. When Lot chooses to go to Sodom, it says, even though he's looking down. So, Nasetenaim doesn't just mean to lift your eyes up like Esainai Le'arim, but it also means to look sort of at something that's about your future. Lot sees stone, that's his future. Avram sees the Hara Moriah. Avram sees the Isle. Right? It's like looking at your future. What happens?
Like she looks.
No, it's not about paying attention. It's about looking what you're looking at. So, Nasetenaim seems to be something about like a fate. And what happens? And then something bizarre happens. Why'd she fall off the camel? Because as we say in Japanese, ha'asimon nafal. How do you say ha'asimon nafal? Well, you can't explain it except to older people who remember what an asimon is. Right? Asimon nafal means like the penny drops. In other words, now there's an understanding. Suddenly everything becomes clear. What becomes clear? I'm not marrying this guy. I'm marrying that guy who I never met. And by the way, what did my family say to me? Hatelchi im ha'ish hazeh. In other words, who engineered this? My family engineered me going off and never coming back home, because that's what's going to happen, that's what does happen, to marry somebody I didn't agree to. And there's no turning back. Now notice what happens here. Vatomer el ha'eved mi ha'ish. She now turns to him and realizes, and she talks to him as an Eved and says, Mihaish, who's the man? Because the man is the one down there, and what does he answer? Hu Adoni. And suddenly everything's very clear. So now the slave, who's unnamed in here, the slave tells Yitzchak everything that happened. Yitzchak brings her to his tent. Yitzchak loves her. Yitzchak is comforted, but we never hear how she feels. We're told Yitzchak loves her, Yitzchak feels comforted. We're never told that, and Rivka falls head over heels. We don't hear that. What we do hear later on is that Rivka and Yitzchak have only one recorded conversation in all of Tanakh. What's their conversation that they have? I mean, they might have talked lots of time. We don't know. What's the one recorded conversation they have in Tanakh? Where she lies to him. Right? Where she says, I mean, it's a half-lie. I mean, it's partially true, but it's not the main motivation. She says, way, way down the line, many years later, she says, if Yaakov marries one of the local girls, I'm going to put my head in the oven. But what she really wants is that Yaakov's under threat from Esav, and he's got to run away. But she doesn't want to tell that to Yitzhak. So instead she says, if he marries a local girl, I can't stand it. Send him away to... And so he sends him to the Lavan. Now, let's think about what's going on underneath this story. And this is the grooming. This is the grooming. How does Rivka feel? Again, we don't have any record of anybody's feelings here except Yitzhak loves her. We don't have records of feelings, but let's think about it from her perspective, what happened. She was duped into going far away and marrying somebody that she might have ended up being happy, but that wasn't her choice. Right? And everybody was in on this. The Eved didn't say anything. Her parents didn't say anything. Brother didn't say anything. All right. So let me ask you a question. Is subterfuge, is duplicity immoral? From the perspective of Tanakh, it's not. Tanakh says very clearly, Im navarti tavar, v'mikesh titpatel. The crooked person, you got to act crookedly. Subterfuge seems to be the way that the underpowered person evens the odds. Because there's somebody who's born with a lot of brawn, and they can get whatever they want. But somebody who has subterfuge has his own weapon, and his own weapon is deception. And the greatest example of that is David and Goliath. Goliath is a monster. And yet David used subterfuge, because David, if you think about it, tricks Goliath. What does he say? You're coming with swords, and I'm coming with Shem Hashem. And five stones. He doesn't mention the five stones. Right? And he gets Goliath to come towards him. And then when he, like, there's trickery involved. But, Petach Bulot Tasem Milchama. Right? That's how you have to fight. Now, Rivka has a claim. How is she going to act on that claim? So she can't. So what does she do? She gets a three Yaakov. And she engineers things, because she's the one who comes up with the idea. You got to go in and get that bracha. She knows what's going to happen when Esa finds out that Yaakov stole the bracha. What's going to happen? She knows her kids well enough. Esav's going to go nuts, which will then give her the opportunity to say. Now, a very interesting thing happens. She tells Yaakov, I think I have it here, she tells Yaakov, you take a look on the back side on page, on Pasuk Mem Gimel, Mem Dalad, she tells Yaakov to run away. Go run away to Lavan until your brother calms down from what you did to him. Excuse me, okay? Stay with him yamim achadim ad asher tashuv chamat achicha ad shuv av achicha mimcha v'shalachti v'krati lecha misham v'shalachti lekachti lecha misham. I'll send for you. By the way, when does Rivka send for Yaakov? She never sends for Yaakov. But what happened? So if I'm Yaakov and I ran away, and Mama said she'll send for me when Esav calms down, and it's been however long. Now, you guys know my theory about that it's been way more than 20 years. However long it's been, and she's never sent a message, I have two choices. What are the two choices? Well, I mean, I have two choices how to interpret her silence. Either Esav is still boiled, which we know is not true, because when Yaakov shows up, what happens? Esav embraces him, and, right? Or maybe Rivka's dead. We didn't hear that either. So maybe there's a third possibility, which is more subterfuge. That maybe what Rivka actually wanted was for Yaakov to go there and to stay there. Why would she want Yaakov to stay there? So let's add another piece to the puzzle. When Yaakov arrives, and this is on the yellow and blue on the bottom of the second page. When Yaakov arrives in Haran, who does he meet? Other shepherds, and then what's Rachel doing? She's herding the sheep. Why is Rachel herding the sheep? Why aren't Laban's sons herding the sheep? The answer is very simple. He ain't got no sons. So when Laban meets Yaakov, who's an experienced herder, Yoshev Oalim, what's Laban thinking? This will be the new head of the family. And he engineers beautifully that he marries both of his daughters. Which means Yaakov is now going to take over the estate. Yaakov will be the one that inherits this estate. Which means, by the way, at this point, sorry to say it, Rivka won. Rivka comes back through Yaakov and takes the estate. One thing changes the whole picture. At some later point, Lavan has boys. We don't know when. And Perek Lamed Aleph, Vayru Bnei Lavan. Bnei Lavan suddenly complained, Yaakov has taken everything that is our father's. Lakach Yaakov et asher lavinu, et asher lavinu asar kolak avodazah. And of course, blood is thicker than water, so Lavan sides with his sons, and suddenly things go bad with Yaakov, and Yaakov has to leave. And everything kind of unravels. But the truth is, up until that point, what was the nature of the relationship? Yaakov became the adopted son, became the head of the estate. And when Lavan would die, that would be it. Now, by the way, Rachel's not ready to give up on this. What does Rachel do as they're leaving? Famously, what does she do? She steals the trophim. Why does she steal the trophim? Simplest pshat. Mordechai Greenberg, Oliver Shalom, wrote on this. Simplest pshat is, because we have records of this from the ancient Near East, holding the trophim is a claim on the estate. Trophim are household gods. If you own them, you were like, that was like a deed to the estate. What is Rachel actually trying to do? She's trying to hold on to the stake. And they say it. What do they say to Yaakov when he says we have to leave? Halon nochriot nechshavnu lo kimacharanu. He has sold us. We're like outsiders here. Vayochal gam acholet kaspenu. About father. He's eaten up all our money. But Rachel's not ready to give up on that. And there's this constant attempt to, if you will, take over Lavan's estate. It ends up not happening because Rabon Machshavot Pelevish. Atzat Adonai Yitakum. And ultimately, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want? He wants Yaakov to come back home and Yaakov to come in as well. And Esav's ready to play it because what happens as soon as Yaakov comes? Vayelech Esav al Eretz. Esav leaves and leaves Eretz Canaan to Yaakov. He goes to Seir and Yaakov comes in and takes over Canaan. And then, of course, the rest of Jewish history marches on. But within the Rabot Machshavot Belevish, you've got a lot of these circles going on in the family that seem to all start with this image of the Ish, who's really an Eved, and whose identity is kept from Rivka, and then she goes all the way to Canaan, thinking she's marrying this man, and ultimately marries Yitzchak, and everything follows from there. This is chiefly based on an article written by Menachem Perry in Proof Text about 20, 30 years ago, I don't know, which takes a look at this story from multiple points of view and identifies that from Rivka's point of view, very different things happening than the way we read the story. And it, hopefully opens up some new vistas.